You've heard of BetaShares. You've probably seen the logo on our podcast. You might even be among their 1 million investors. So you can imagine that I'm delighted to say BetaShares is the official ETF partner of the Australian Finance Podcast. With nearly 100 exchange-traded funds, you can go to betashares.com.au and immerse yourself in ETFs and unique insights covering all of the sectors, themes, core and satellite positions you could want. Think cybersecurity through the HACK ETF, robotics and AI with the RBTZ ETF, and uranium with the URNM ETF. The list goes on. To explore the BetaShares ETF range, visit betashares.com.au, read the relevant PDS and TMD on the website, and consider if the fund is right for you. BetaShares Capital Limited is the issuer.
Is there a Spotify Wrapped for investing? If you want to invest in shares or ETFs, our friends at Perla are more than one step ahead of the curve. On average, people who use Perla invest $1,750 every month. That's what we want to see, proper dollar cost averaging. With automated investing tools making your life simple, Perla investors have well and truly mastered the art of investing small bits lots of times. So, if you're ready to start growing your net worth in 2024, follow the link in your Spotify or Apple Podcast player right now to discover how you can get started today.
Welcome to the Australian Finance Podcast.
I'm Kate Campbell.
And I'm Owen Rask.
And we're here to give you the tools and knowledge to invest both your time and money better.
If you're new, feel free to jump in with our Starter Pack series that aired in early 2022, or our Shares or ETF mini series.
We've got plenty to share with you in today's episode, but if you want to catch us on socials,
head to Rask Australia on Insta and Twitter.
I'm also found at Kate Campbell AUS on Insta.
And I'm Owen Rask AU on Insta.
Just beware of the fake accounts. We'll never DM you about trading strategies or crypto. And if it sounds a bit weird, it's probably not us.
And just one final heads up before we get into the show. This podcast contains general financial information only. Tom, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Owen. Great to be on.
Yeah, it's always good to chat to you, mate. And we often do this now as a result of the partnership between BetaShares and Rask. It's wonderful. And you've been on the Self Wealth Live program. You've done live shows with me, webinars, and appeared on the Australian Investors podcast. First time here on the Finance podcast, though, so it's a delight to have you. I've got two icebreakers to start with. And one of them, well, they both actually came from GPT, given that we're going to be talking about artificial intelligence, about technology stocks, about ETFs, this type of a thing. On a scale of RoboCop to Skynet, so this is going back in the memory palace.
Sure, I'm familiar, luckily.
Yeah. How close are we to achieving true artificial intelligence?
Okay, so on that scale, obviously, I'll confirm my thinking with you.
Yep.
RoboCop would be the lower end. We're half human, half AI. We're still in the driver's seat. And Skynet's full-blown Armageddon, AI has taken over.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, yeah. So definitely still the RoboCop side for me. I mean, we weren't even talking about AI 12 months ago. Yeah. I think it's fair to say we're still, as humans, in the driver's seat. We're controlling things. We're very much controlling the inputs, which can affect the outputs a lot. Like, we're still seeing some errors pop up in things like ChatGPT. You know, outputs are only as good as your inputs. I'd like to think at the Skynet stage, AI, they'd spot the incorrect inputs and they'd be fully in control.
All right, mate, I like that answer. Number two, of these CEOs, which one is most likely an AI sent from the future and why? And I've got three US and one Aussie. Mm-hmm. We've got Elon Musk of Tesla and SpaceX and all that. Jeff Bezos of Amazon and Blue Origin. Richard White, who's our Australian representative. He's from WiseTech. Mm-hmm. And then we've got Jensen Huang from NVIDIA.
Okay. It's good to have the Aussie representation in there.
Yep.
My mind doesn't go to White, though. I think my heart says Elon Musk, mm-hmm, for probably obvious reasons. He's quite eccentric and out there. He hasn't quite figured out, I don't think, all social norms. things like just randomly buying Twitter for not many sound reasons in the way he's run that. Or I don't know if you've seen that photo of him and his three sons with the Pope. I think it's one of the strangest photos I've seen in my entire life, very AI-esque. My brain would say Jensen, though.
Yeah.
I mean, he's built a company that can power AI. Very, very suspicious if you were an AI yourself. much more low key in the media, as you'd probably want to be if you were keeping a low profile. And very, I think he studied computer science. He's very knowledgeable in the space as well. So he's probably the logical answer. And maybe Elon's AI was sent here, but it's a bit buggy still, the RoboCop era.
Okay. I love that answer. And this is where people can get their, I guess, their suspicions answered. So you're the man that's got your finger on the tech. So for folks that don't know what you do, they obviously know what BetaShares is, they know the brand, but can you tell us a little bit about what you do day to day?
Yeah, of course. So I've been lucky enough to be working here at BetaShares for four and a bit years now. Mm-hmm. I started in the team in a sales role, actually. I was working with our wealth management clients, which is great exposure across the product suite, get to interact with financial professionals. But over time, my role and myself wanting a role kind of changed and integrated into what I am now, which is an investment strategist. And so what that means in the team, I still get to work with clients, but in maybe a one step removed from the sales process, a bit more specialized with our product set. I'll put together the presentations and pieces of insights of our funds and go and present those, or they'll be uploaded to our website. So yeah, do that, and also gonna do great things like this, where I can represent the company with on podcasts or webinars, and just I guess a bit more of a specialized role amongst the fund knowledge and investment knowledge.
Yeah, I like it, mate. It's I think it's actually a great position that you're in, because you do get to educate people on the things they're really interested in. Speaking of, one of the most popular, I think it may be the most popular, which is NDQ. Is NDQ the biggest?
It ETF? Would be our biggest, yeah.
Yeah. So BetaShares NDQ or the NASDAQ ETF that people are really familiar with. It's been in the market a long time, performed exceptionally well. I know I would say a lot of people that listen to this invest in the fund. Mm-hmm. But for those who are still inclined to be on the direct stock investing side, what would be the benefits? This is just a very simple question, but what would be the benefits of using, say, NDQ over just direct stock picking?
Yeah, it's such a fundamental question as to why we've seen ETFs grow so much over the past decade, particularly index ETFs. So just taking a step back, as you covered it a bit there, but the NASDAQ 100 ETF, NDQ is the ticker code. So investors can go on the ASX through their trading platform and buy that the same way they buy an individual stock.
Yep.
Now, the difference is it's a fund. And when you buy that, you're not getting exposure just to an individual name. You're getting exposure to actually 100 companies, the largest 100 companies listed on the NASDAQ 100. And when we think of an index like the NASDAQ 100, it's what we call a market capitalization weighted index. But it's actually a modified market capitalization weighted index, but we can ignore that for now. We won't go into that. What that means essentially is, being a market cap weighted index, the larger a company is, the more weight it has in the portfolio. And so understanding these two things, we're buying a fund of 100 or so companies with one trade, and understanding that we let our bigger companies take up more weight, we can think of some advantages against a single stock holding, coming back to your question. So when we buy a single stock, we're taking on a lot of idiosyncratic risk. What I mean by that is there are factors that could affect that individual stock that may not affect the technology sector as a whole. So if the lawsuit came up, that could individually impact the stock you've bought, but the rest of the technology stocks are fine. If the CEO left or was booted out, again, could impact that individual stock, but not companies adjacent to it. So probably the key benefit of an index-based approach is diversification and the ability to diversify away those single stock risks. Because if you're holding that company in a basket of other companies, the impact of its price movement will be much smaller compared to the other companies. And even taking a step further, let's say, back to that same example, let's say a CEO left one company and it was bad for that company's stock price, and that CEO went to a competitor that may be good for that company's stock price. So you also get this potential benefits for one company who's a competitor to another. So really strong benefits from diversification. It's probably the main one. The other one I was going to mention is just in terms of picking the right company.
Yeah.
It's so hard to pick the right company. We see it with even professional active managers who make a profession out of picking stocks, and I'm sure you're your viewer base is familiar with something like the S&P active versus passive or active versus benchmark reports, and that majority of active managers don't even beat the benchmark. So it's pretty hard for the average the average punter to do so. So this year is an example. Let's say, you know, the Mag 7's done great. Mag 7, Magnificent 7, those seven mega cap technology stocks. If at the start of this year you said, you know what, I'm going to go with Tesla. That's my pick. They're going to go really well. You know, they're down 34-odd%. Whereas if you think of NASDAQ, back to NDQ, the index, it's up something like 11% this year to date. And you've got Tesla in there as a big part of it. It just hasn't impacted returns as much, and you've benefited from diversification amongst other names, not picking that individual winner.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good example to use. And particularly given the intro icebreaker around if Elon Musk is some sort of AI from the future. It makes a lot of sense. I think another thing that is really appealing to folks is just particularly for something like NDQ is you don't need to open a US stock trading account. You don't have to worry about W-8 BEN forms, which is that tax form that everyone kind of goes on about that they have to not only fill out, but then have to refill out if they've got like SMSF, a family trust, individual name, company name. It just gets more and more complicated as you go down the list. So that's definitely one of the major appeals. And NDQ was one of the first in that regard. So there is an acronym that I heard of recently. So we've all heard of FOMO, the fear of missing out.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the fear of getting overwhelmed? I don't know if you've heard of this one.
I hadn't heard of it before.
Mm.
FOGO,
we could call it.
FOGO.
Yeah.
No, so.
So one of the things that investors will kind of be familiar with is like analysis paralysis. They get overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious like how you think investors with now 300 plus ETFs in Australia, how people can think about, maybe break that up, maybe just kind of move into building a good portfolio of ETFs.
Yeah. And the way I initially think of this, as you put it, is kind of information paralysis. Like there's too much information out there. How could you possibly make the right choice if you haven't studied every little thing and every company report at a company level or every different ETF? How could you possibly make the right decision? And I think this comes, in my thinking, it comes down to there's a difference between being knowledgeable in what you're investing in and being knowledgeable in investing. And I think there's a pretty important distinction there. I personally encourage people to be, if they can be, knowledgeable at what they're investing in. So say I've got a friend who's a doctor, for instance, you know, look at, on the theme of tech, look at med tech and see if there's any, or bioscience or biotech, and see if there's any, you know, cool companies or good ETFs that hold companies you're familiar with, and maybe you can have an advantage there, potentially. But not everyone's going to have that level of specialization. And so as investors, how can we choose what to invest in, or how can we make sound choices? And I think it comes down to knowledge of investing, which is very different to knowledge of investment. Things like, you know, we've already touched on already that, you know, understanding the benefits of diversification, understanding the benefits of keeping costs low, understanding what asset allocation is, you know, how much should I put to equities, how much should I put to fixed income or alternatives, and how that drives investment returns over the long term. And by understanding these key principles, we as investors can make really sound investment decisions without necessarily being an expert in AI or technology. And they'll play a part in your well-diversified portfolio, but they won't, you know, overrun it.
Yeah, I like that. I've never heard someone put it that way. And I think most people that listen to this, even if they haven't begun the research into their own stocks or ETFs, they would know that investing as a general rule is a wonderful thing, and it's really important to grow wealthy. Like, it's probably the only way to think about creating serious wealth for yourself and for your family. So I really like the way you frame that. You don't have to know what Tesla's profit margin is to invest in the NDQ ETF, for example. One of the things that is becoming increasingly common, at least in the RAS community, is people, they build that core and satellite approach. Mm-hmm. They've got their low-cost ETFs in the center, and then they've got more exposures around the outside. I think it was you that first introduced me to the idea that maybe there's a difference between thematic investing and sector-based investing. So I'm curious how you bucket those. Maybe if you have some examples that you could say, this is like how I think about it.
Yeah, 100%. It's a really, really common question. And sometimes the lines can get blurred, which is why it can be hard for investors. So starting with sector investing, when we think of sector investing. This is probably the more traditional of the two. If you look at any, let's use it. So if you look at our fund pages, for instance, and you looked at our NASDAQ 100 ETF on our BetaShares website, on there we have a sector breakdown. You know, what sectors are each of these companies sitting in? You know, for the NASDAQ, it's predominantly information technology and healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also sectors like financials. You know, in the Australian market, the financial sector is really big. We got our big four banks.
Mm.
You got Macquarie Bank, other non-bank financials. So when we think of sector investing, there's usually quite a clear cut between the relationship between the sector the company sit in.
Mm-hmm.
And there are ETFs that get access to those different sectors. So we've got like a global healthcare ETF, ticker code DRUG,
mm-hmm.
That you know invests in the biggest healthcare companies in the world, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson. We've got an Australian finance ETF. Mm. So you look at things like the big four banks that are in there, et cetera. When we think of thematic investing, the difference is thematic investing and thematic funds aim to invest in companies that are related not by traditional sectors, but by trends or by themes, for lack of a better word, or these future mega trends. So think of things like climate innovation companies. We've got an ETF, which is Earth, ERTH is the ticker code. And that's got companies across, electric vehicles or clean energy, for instance, which don't sit in the same traditional sectors, but are related by those themes, that theme of climate change. To our discussion on technology today, a good example of a thematic ETF would be a robotics and AI ETF. So we've got the BetaShares robotics and AI ETF, which is the ticker code's RBTZ.
Mm-hmm.
It's had really strong growth. I think it's around $250 million in assets under management, which is really good for a thematic ETF like that. And in that ETF, you've got companies like, C3 AI is a good example. And they're like a software-based AI company. They'll go out to other companies and try and help integrate AI software with them to try and boost their productivity.
Right.
So a software, an IT company more traditionally. Alongside in that portfolio, you've got something like Intuitive Surgical, and they are a robotics company that work on robots that can help in really complicated surgeries. So a healthcare company. But since they're related by this overriding theme of robotics and AI, they can sit in the same portfolio.
Yep.
An example, I kind of mentioned, lines can be blurred.
Yep.
I think a good example of that in my mind is cybersecurity now. So cybersecurity, I think traditionally would be classified as a thematic ETF. Mm. But as a thematic grows over time and becomes better, more defined, there's a pretty well-defined cybersecurity sector now.
Yeah.
It's not defined by the traditional sector classifications, but something like cybersecurity, I think, sits in between the thematic and the sector. You've got a well-defined set of companies that are in a similar sector, but they're still somewhat future oriented thematic, but it's also here and now. So that's why it can be difficult for investors sometimes to decipher.
Mm. But I like that breakdown because some people think that they're investing in a thematic just because it's a sector. And it like you said, it's easy to get blurred. Like if you're investing in healthcare, you think, well, the thematic is an aging population, for example. That's like the underpinning. But it's really sector-based because it's just the companies that operate in that sector anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where you can naturally... It's hard to break them up, but actually, I really like the examples that you gave there. There were two new ETFs in the range from BetaShares that I think are worth talking about. So everyone is really familiar with NDQ because it's been super popular. It's one of those ETFs that can go in the core. Some people may even have it as like a satellite tilt.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say most people probably have it in their core. But there's two new ETFs, which I'll let you call them out. But these are quite interesting because a lot of people, and you alluded to it when you said modified before, when you said the NASDAQ 100 is kind of modified in a way, the modified market cap. These two new ETFs, in anticipation for this meeting, I didn't actually know that they'd made the market already, but they are out there and they're coming up to being, at the time of recording, a month live. Can you tell us a little bit about these and why investors might consider them?
Yeah, of course, can do it. It's been really exciting to launch these two new funds last month. As you alluded to, the NASDAQ 100 ETF is our most popular ETF in terms of FUM.
Mm.
I think it must be getting close to the $5 billion mark.
Mm.
at this point in time. It's had such strong growth, like since inception, which was around 8 years ago. We're talking about, you know, 20% on average, 20% per annum. It's obviously a real favorite for Australian investors, particularly because, you know, as an Australian investor, our market's so skewed to, you know, financials and materials and so underweight technology.
Yeah.
So looking internationally, it's like such an awesome building block to give us this great sector diversification into, you know, the best technology stocks in the world. So naturally, we wanted to, you know, work to provide even more ways for investors to get access to the NASDAQ exchange.
Mm.
It's been an awesome opportunity for myself as well. We've been working really closely with NASDAQ and the team there and their strategy team, which has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
With putting materials together. So the first ETF that I'll touch on is the NextGen ETF, NASDAQ NextGen.
Mm-hmm.
And as you might be able to guess from the name, you're looking at the companies that aren't quite on or in the top 100 yet. But they're on the verge of getting there. So it's really 101 to 200 on the NASDAQ exchange.
Yep.
It's been an ETF a lot of investors and advisors have asked for a while, right?
Right.
You've got these huge, successful mega cap companies on the NASDAQ 100. Why wouldn't you want to own them before they got there?
Yep.
And that's what you can do now with the NextGen ETF. So an awesome opportunity to get access to smaller size companies. So they've probably got, you know, more growth potential. It would classify more as a mid-cap benchmark. So the size, it's not quite like a small capitalization.
Not what people in Australia might call a small cap.
Exactly, yeah. Right. Yeah, our small caps and international small caps are obviously very different size-wise. But it's just, yeah, great opportunity. Some of the, you know, the names we know and love that are in the NASDAQ 100, names like Tesla, names like Netflix, they started in the next gen. They started in this index years ago and they grew through the next gen and graduated into the NASDAQ 100.
Yeah, right.
And what the research team tend to find was, as a company grew to a larger size in the next gen, so it's getting close to that graduation phase, its performance leading up to graduation was usually significantly better than the 12 months after graduation.
Oh, right.
Which is actually really handy when we think of, as you touched on again, the market capitalization weighting that these indexes have, because that means when it's that larger portion of the next gen, it's at the top end of the next gen.
Mm.
It's performing well. You're capitalizing on that large performance. Then when it graduates to the actual NASDAQ, it's probably going to have quite a small weight when it graduates.
Yeah.
So we're seeing a lot of investors use these two really as a complement to one another. Probably NASDAQ, the main NASDAQ being the flagship fund, the NASDAQ 100.
Yep.
And then, you know, investors with, you know, the appetite to go to those smaller size companies and with high growth potential have been using it alongside it already.
Yeah, right. So is that when you get the feedback from like your financial advisors and those types of people in your community, that's what they're trying to do, is like pair them together?
That's how I think, you know, investors who have used and known and loved the NASDAQ 100 will use that alongside it to, you know, varying degrees. As we talked about, you know, cognizant of things like diversification, you know, you don't want 100%, or maybe you do, but just understand why you want to use more technology in your portfolio, for instance.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, because a lot of people do say that could be a criticism, like, oh, it's only 100, I want more. Well, here's an opportunity to add that right beside it.
Exactly right. Yeah. And then in contrast, I don't know if contrast is the right word, but I'll use it. In contrast, the other ETF we brought out, which is the ticker code's QNDQ,
mm-hmm.
And it's an equally weighted NASDAQ 100 ETF. So no surprises for figuring that one out. But what we do, unlike the market cap weighted NASDAQ 100, in this ETF, each company gets a 1% weight. So no matter how big you are, how small you are, you get 1% weight each on each rebalance. So you still get exposure to those top 100 companies that everyone knows and loves, but you're just doing it in a, you know, a different weighting methodology. And you know, it just means you're getting a higher exposure to some of those companies that aren't at the top end, which can also be great for growth potential. And it's been a really strong performer. What I found probably most interesting when I was doing my research around these funds, I compared the NASDAQ 100 equal weight
mm-hmm.
to the S&P 500 index. We know that the NASDAQ 100 market cap has outperformed the S&P 500. Yep. We know that a lot of the NASDAQ 100 companies are on the S&P 500.
Mm-hmm.
S&P holds, it's not exchange biased. But the NASDAQ 100 equal weight had actually pretty handsomely outperformed the S&P 500 market cap weight. And so what that means in my mind is that the strength of those 100 companies, even when you weight them equally, even when you're not, you know, riding the performance of those large mega cap Mag 7 names, there's still such a good breadth of growth and earnings and fundamentals across that index that supported really strong price growth to outperform even the market cap weighted S&P.
Mm. I like that. That's really interesting because it's probably something. So for folks that maybe just add some context here, for folks that are listening, the Magnificent Seven are the big companies like Amazon, Tesla. We've mentioned a few names already. Mm-hmm. But basically by having an equal weight, you basically take some from them and you put it into the lower down companies. Mm-hmm. And traditionally people have thought, well, the Magnificent Seven are just great companies, just own those ones. But then through that research, you've been able to determine, well, still, even if you balance it all out, still might be better than, at least historically, better than the S&P 500, which is more broader across all the stock exchanges. So that's really interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's quite, because I mean, a lot of your listeners who've got their ear to the ground at the moment would have probably heard some form of stat over the past 12 months saying, you know, the Mags have driven 100% of the market's returns.
Yeah.
Magnificent Seven, because they perform so well, they account for, you know, 100% or more of the US market's returns. But actually, to your point, looking at the equal weight, it's not exactly the case.
Yeah.
There is performance out there in you know, strategy like that as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think that would also be really appealing to people that are worried about overlap. Like if they own individual stocks for whatever reason, they own Apple, they own Amazon, et cetera, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So I guess when it comes to us talking about technology today, I'm curious, like if you were sitting in an investor's seat and the ETF provider was sitting across the table from you, how you would distinguish between not just that kind of, not just the ETF provider, but just the industry overall with like hype and these types of things. Like we all want to invest in like disruptive companies, the companies that are leading the future, but how do we distinguish between, you know, what may be genuine disruption and what might just be just fluff?
Yeah, it can be really tricky. At its most simple, I like to come back to some of our old financial education and just think about everyone's favorite ratio, which is the PE ratio.
Yep.
If you think about the PE ratio, looking at how a company is valued based on price and comparing that to underlying earnings.
Yep.
So when things are maybe a bit overhyped, you could see that price increase a lot, but the earnings not move much.
Yeah.
And the PE ratios can get, you know, quite significant. On the flip side, where we see, you know, hype around a thematic or hype around a new technology backed by real growth opportunities and real earnings opportunities, you probably see both move. You'll see the price increase, but you also see the earnings increase, which means if you look at the ratio, it can stay relatively, you know, similar, relatively palatable.
Yeah.
So a good real life example. Let's use Nvidia over the past year. So over the past year, Nvidia's stock price has returned 230-odd%.
Okay.
Extremely strong performance.
For a big company, that's huge.
Incredible growth we've seen. And people naturally worried about that, right? Because that's such high price growth. Then you look at their underlying profits or underlying earnings. And over that same or over a similar time frame, those have grown about 140%.
Right.
Which also for a company of that size is unheard of.
Yeah.
So the price has moved more than the earnings. So there is a bit of hype involved in that, that the PE ratio has increased.
Yep.
But seeing those earnings increase so much, and they've done it for multiple earnings reports now, you can see there is something behind it. If we compare that to a time like the dot-com bubble, where we saw, this was the early 2000s, a lot of the companies listed on the NASDAQ exchange actually. It's when, you know, all these companies that were new websites and new online businesses and people thought, this is the future, this is the world. And it is in a way, but these companies had no, you know, earnings growth to back up the price performance that they were experiencing. And we saw a bubble where the NASDAQ's PE ratio got above, you know, 60, 80, I think even over 100.
Mm.
Whereas you compare that to today, we've seen stellar performance, but the NASDAQ's trailing PE ratio, so if we think about the past 12 months earnings, is around 30 times, which is pretty high.
Mm.
Historical average would be mid-20s. When I think about growth investments in technology, I like to take more of a forward-thinking look, thinking to the future. So we also get a forward PE ratio, so the price compared to next year's earnings.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at that, it's around 25 times. So a bit closer to that long-term average. You take it a step further, we think about earnings in 2 years' time. What's the P ratio there? It's closer to 20 times.
Right.
So if these companies can achieve the earnings expectations of the market, which are significant, there's no denying that the underlying expectations for earnings are significant, but these companies have been achieving them for a number of years now. And you take a bit of a longer term time frame, you know, you're talking about fairly palatable levels of price to earnings ratios and, you know, underlying earnings backing up the price performance. So giving some confidence to investors that there's something really there. It's not all just fluff.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's a really good way to frame it, is like to go into the fund reports, like on the BetaShares website, you can go in and you can click on the fund profile, fund report, and you can actually see the forward, I think it's the forward price earnings ratio there. And it will show anyone that's listening or watching this what their kind of valuation is overall. And I'm always surprised by that, because I'm always like, well, the NASDAQ did so well last year. Like, what's the PE ratio now?
Mm-hmm.
But it's because the earnings are moving so fast as well.
Yeah.
People just think price is up, therefore expensive.
Yeah.
When not necessarily the case.
Yeah, exactly right. And just it's a really good point for investors, you know, for all ETFs, not just ourselves. Like, it's one of the great advantages of ETFs is that transparency and the information you can get from a fund website like NASDAQ. So you can go on there, you can see all the companies we hold and how much we hold them. So you could dig into those individual names, or as you said, go to the fund performance or the fund fact sheet, and you know, you can see historical performance, you can see some key ratios, the average market cap. So just awesome tools for investors to use and wrap their heads around to understand what they're looking at.
Yeah, for sure. I've got a few more questions here, just more a bit tongue-in-cheek. So this next one is not necessarily a forecast. I'm not calling for a recommendation from you. But if I did force you to give me an answer to this question, I'm only assuming that you would be investing a small amount of your portfolio into an AI-related theme or sub-theme, or however you want to think about it, a sector, or even if you just name an ETF, it's totally up to you. But if you took like a decade-long view, so like the 2020s and if beyond, or just in the 2020s, I've asked you this question previously and it was really interesting to hear your answer. But just even if it's just a theme writ large, or what you're really keeping an eye on, what would you go with?
Yeah, no, really really good question. Thanks for handling the disclaimers for me.
Yeah.
I think AI adjacent, I think for me, it's one we've already actually touched on earlier, but our cybersecurity ETF.
Oh, yeah.
Which may not be initially intuitive for every listener. It is something, you know, a bit more understandable at the moment. I think, I mean, as the very first question you asked in terms of where we are in this AI theme, as I mentioned, like 18 months ago, we wouldn't be talking about AI, and now it's, you know, if you're talking tech, you're talking AI. It's been rapid, but it's been very short.
Yeah.
If you think about, you know, advancements that we've seen over the past, you know, 20 odd years, have been really life changing. Things like the growth of the internet or mobile phones. You know, you went from the initial phones, even before your Nokias, you're playing little snake game on a 2-bit phone there, and now you can play like Call of Duty on your iPhone. So that's insane advancement, and I think we're going to see similar from AI. So it's so hard to predict 1, 2, 5 years what the capabilities will even be. But something I do understand a bit more of and can relate it to is cybersecurity, because we know how digital the world has gotten and is going. We know how important it is to make sure everything's secure in that world. And finally, we know how complicated it's becoming to do so. So it's becoming really hard for individual companies to do something like cybersecurity in-house. You have to rely on these big cybersecurity players, like, you know, your listeners might be familiar with CrowdStrike, for instance, who offer cybersecurity support and platforms for companies that integrate AI. So they use AI in their platforms to try and combat AI threats. And it's just one that I think no matter what technology takes off or what happens, it's a great umbrella thematic that kind of covers a lot of different areas of growth. So that's my pick at the moment.
Yeah, interesting. So definitely one for folks to put on their watch list. Cybersecurity across the board is a huge, huge thing. I'm just thinking of people that drive a Tesla and they try and use autopilot. You probably want to make sure that it's protected.
It has to be, yeah.
And that's just an example of where we could be going in the future, which is fascinating to think about. I will put a link to all of this, the funds that we mentioned today in the show notes so people can continue their research, in particular for the new funds, which have white papers and things that you can read before you invest. But I think that's a great place to start. There's plenty of literature on the website. So I'll refer people to that. But I've got one final question for you, Tom. And I've asked you this on the Investors Podcast. I've asked you it here on the Finance Podcast, mm-hmm. which is if you could go back in time and give yourself, your younger self, one piece of advice on investing, what would it be?
That's good. It's good. I always like this question. I think I've got a different answer this okay. time. Well, I've got two answers that come to mind. The okay. first would be to buy Bitcoin.
Okay.
But that's more of an investment itself rather than investment advice. So maybe yep. that's cheating. So the second bit of the actual bit of investment advice would just be start early or start earlier.
Yep.
I think as you know, most of your listeners who have probably started some might not have started. This might be that they might be dipping their toes into the industry by listening to podcasts like your own, which is so awesome for education and for teaching people. But dipping your toes in as early as you can, because for a few reasons. Firstly, it's the best way to understand things.
Mm-hmm.
You invest some money, there's money on the line, you do your research, you feel it a bit more. It kind of demystifies some of the fears you might have in your own head about it. And also, you know, tip for a lot of investors, not true for all investors, but for a lot of investors, if you start early in your life, early in your career, you're probably starting with smaller amounts. So you can make the mistakes that every investor makes. I think every investor probably makes the same mistakes. And at least you're doing it with a lower amount of money at the start. And as your income increases, as your investment wealth increases, you've already learned from those mistakes early on, and you can make money count when there's more of it.
Mm, I like that, and I also like how you gave the tongue-in-cheek answer of Bitcoin. I often think about that when they're in the movies. I think this is a tech-related podcast episode. They're in the movies and they have a time machine. I always wonder, what was Apple trading at back then? Would you give advice to your younger self to say, go and buy Apple or go and buy, you know, in this case, an ETF, you know, the NDQ ETF 10 years ago kind of thing. Well, this has been heaps of fun, mate. I really appreciate you taking the time. I'll put links in the show notes so people can read some of your research online and find out more about what you guys do at BetaShares. So thank you.
Nah, thanks, Owen. Always really, really enjoy our chats.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Australian Finance Podcast. We hope you learned something new and were able to take one thing away from this episode.
If you're keen to learn more, head on over to Rask Education and take one of our free money and investing courses. You could even become a Rask Core member for less than your Netflix subscription each month. And don't forget to subscribe for new episodes in your inbox every week.
Plus, if you enjoyed the show, we'd love you to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and send any questions our way via the link in the description. And before we go on, did this podcast contain personal financial advice just for me?
Absolutely not, Kate. Our podcast actually contains general financial information only. What that means is the information does not take into account your financial needs, goals, objectives, or even your situation. So because of that, it's important that you consider if the information is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on it.
If that all sounds a bit confusing or you're still working out what your needs are, it's a great idea to consult a licensed and trusted financial planner. And don't forget to do your own research.
Are you thinking about starting your wealth-creating journey, but not sure where to put your hard-earned dollars? InvestSmart can help. InvestSmart offers a free quiz that makes it easy to find the right InvestSmart ETF portfolio to help you reach your goals. Just visit investsmart.com.au and hit Get Started. Answer a few simple questions about your goals and how much you want to invest, and you'll get a tailored statement of advice with a portfolio recommendation. You can visit investsmart.com.au for a no obligations free statement of advice. This ad is brought to you by InvestSmart Advice, AFSL 334107. For more than a decade, I've been hunting for the best investors and their methods, strategies, and tools for investing. After years in the industry, countless books, a few degrees, and 1,000 podcasts and live shows, I've rolled this accumulated knowledge into something called Rask Invest. If you've ever heard me talk about a core and a satellite, active and passive, true long-term compounding, or you simply want to know exactly how I would invest, now is your chance. Rask Invest is our new investment service, designed for all types of investors who want professional management of their core portfolio at a low cost
from a team they trust. Rask Invest helps you automate your wealth creation and passive income. Simply click the link that says Invest with Owen in your podcast player to join one of our live platform walkthroughs or book a call with us. You can also view the Rask Invest PDS and TMD and get invested with me.